I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Lowe!
Rugby weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Jamie Heaslip, thanks a million for coming in to see us.
Thanks for having me.
It's a busy time. When I say World Cup quarterfinal week, what comes into your mind automatically?
Excitement, straight away. Giddiness, memories of that week coming into it. A lot of confidence. You have to be in that mindset and making sure that you've boxed off everything that needs to be boxed off. And just enjoying it, really. That's what comes into my head. And I think that's probably where a lot of guys, where their head's at right now. I mean, it was interesting just seeing, Church, Keane doing, I always forget his actual name, Keane doing his media during the week. Yeah. And then, like, you could see he was holding back, I'm not telling you anything. Not like that, but he wasn't telling the game plan. But you could see a confidence coming from him, coming from Johnny as well. And you could see a bit of giddiness in their eyes as well, which you want. You want these guys excited about this game. Huge opportunity, really exciting time. And I'd say they have a quiet confidence in the team's ability, knowing they've beaten them two out of the last three times that they played them. Mm-hmm. And that, on the day, in knockout rugby, it's anyone's.
Yeah. What does this week pull up for you memory-wise on a personal level? I think a lot of people would have forgotten that you actually captained Ireland in Cardiff 4 years ago.
So, yeah.
Obviously the high of that followed by the low of the result.
The actual results, yeah. In a really weird way, so in one side of it, when you look at the game in its whole, you're slightly proud of the players. Sorry, you are proud of the players in terms of how, we went behind by, I think, 3 scores and how we pulled ourselves back into that game. And we were actually really in contention of actually getting ahead. And then, we make a mistake and they punish us, right? And then I think they get a try in the kind of last couple of minutes of the game. The game was it was done at that stage, really. Even though we were chasing, I'm kind of proud of that effort of the guys who came back into it. But then obviously the outcome is gut-wrenching, because you kind of, the way it was, we were home, I think we flew home the next day or the day after pretty much, and the same in New Zealand. I mean, in New Zealand probably hurt even more. I think in England in 2015, we were beaten. They exploited a weakness in our defensive system, which up and out defensive system, which we were still kind of applying, even though we were trying to tweak it a little bit. They exploited that, moved the ball to the edge, and that was the competitive advantage that we just didn't react to. And they were making 10, 15 meters most times on the edge and catching us out. 2011 in a weird way is actually harder to take than 2015, because when you look at the game, we dropped the ball over the line. We were over the line, we dropped it twice, and then 2 system errors on defensively, and they scored 2 tries, which normally we wouldn't give up. And that, I think that team as well, 2011, was one hell of a team. Yeah. And that was probably tougher because, in a way, we lost it. While in 2015, it's probably fair to say we were beaten by the better side on the day. And then when the lads fast forward to now, I think Johnny mentioned it as well after the Japan game, they got a taste while it's of losing in the World Cup.
Mm.
And, it wasn't good. Never is.
Mm.
And they don't want to taste that again. And those guys, our guys, let's just be the guys aren't here just to win a quarterfinal and then lose a semi.
Yeah.
They're here to go the distance. They might not shout about it too much. I know some of the Scottish players said we're going to win a World Cup, or we're here to win a World Cup. The lads, that is definitely the goal, and they'll say that kind of once, but they won't shout about it.
Yeah.
They'll peel it back to the different layers, and this is another step on the way to that.
Yeah, you think back to 2011 and 2015, there was such optimism heading into those quarterfinal games. Obviously 2011, Wales, we were favourites for that game.
Yeah.
2015, we had a good pool stage coming in off the back of that.
Probably favourites for that game as well.
Is this week maybe suits us even better from a mindset point of view, because I think the bookies have the over plus 12 point.
Yeah.
Like, does that
sorry, we're plus 12, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really buy into this whole like, are we underdogs? Are we favorites? What's better? What's not? I mean, other guys might. I never did. I was very much focused on this is the here and now, and this is what we got to do now. I think that's what the guys will be looking at this week. They'll be would have trained hard Monday, Tuesday. You can see them all. Well, they're 8 hours ahead now, so they're just probably all winding up and going to bed now. 9 hours ahead, I think. We saw that today. They've been in Disneyland and doing all sorts.
They're actually staying there.
Yeah, you're right. They are. Very interesting place to stay. A bit of levity, maybe. But you see there, you know, not a whole lot going on Monday, Tuesday. You know, they're focused, let the pressure off a little bit Wednesday, and then they're going to be just into automatic pilot come tomorrow on. And I think there's going to be a lot of a quiet confidence from the side, like there always is. I think, you know, when we look at all the games, they came under pretty heavy criticism after the Japan game. I think, but if you look at, and they said it, no one was really listening, like Japan are a good side. And I don't know if that's everyone's fault for not respecting Japan as a side, but look how they've actually been playing one of the most attractive brands of rugby and gone really well with it. Mm. Okay. So maybe credit where credit's due there. And then I think, but if we had won that game, I don't think anyone would have given out about the Rush result or the Samoa result. I think that's kind of skewered everyone's mindset, but I don't think it's skewered the players, because they'd be like, bonus point win. You know, what more, at what point does that become acceptable to people? Is it if they put 70 points on it? If they put 8, like they're damned they do, damned they don't. Yeah. So I think that's where they'll get their confidence from. Yes, there's things that they got to tweak, but there's always things you got to tweak. You know, you've always got to look at the game. You know, where can we get better? Where can we not? I think they've held a lot of launch plays back, which I think is important. They didn't have to use a lot of launch plays, really. I think they've held a good few back. And that's kind of maybe, hopefully, that sets up New Zealand. And then also, I think in the last game in particular, you saw a little bit more multi-phase play, a little bit more passing, particularly from the forwards in terms of going out the back or tip-ons.
Yeah.
And then you saw a lot, Johnny doing a lot of Brumbies plays, you know, hitting that first centre, looping them, and he either hits the front door or goes back out to Johnny. But I think they did, if I'm right now, you have to check the numbers on me here. Murray would definitely know. I think they did 8 and he hit the front door on 7 of them. And I'm thinking, looking at that, when I'm looking at the game as a whole, going, is he doing that to set it up for this week?
Yeah.
You know, making them respect that front door. So hopefully they might get a fraction narrow so we can expose them on the edge. And then that'll be really interesting to see in terms of, you know, when they name the team, who's, like, example, who's going to be the full back, because that's a bit of a talking point, you know, and both had different attributes in terms of being that second receiver on the out the back door pass to Johnny and being that playmaker to express on the edges. Mm. And both Jordan and Rob have kind of different attributes around that. So I don't know, it'd be just really interesting to see if they were setting that up for this week as well as all the other kind of plays.
Yeah, when we mentioned the All Blacks, your own personal memories, because again, there's highs and lows, like every
mostly
nation,
lows.
Yeah. But you obviously dedicate a chapter in your book to Chicago, so it's a really good memory to finish off with. Obviously the Richie McCaw red card was a low to start with.
Yeah. But
there's good memories there as well.
Yeah, and the way we try to frame playing New Zealand in the book for my career, it's kind of like, not that it's kind of like my career, but I kind of measure my career off the back of this side, because they're best in the world and we want to be best in the world. So we always wanted to play them as much as we can, as often as we can. And that's what we did. I think at one stage, like, now one of them was a World Cup, but we ended up in New Zealand like 4 times in 4 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Playing New Zealand on 3 of those tours. And you get, the more you often you play them, the more insight you get from them, the more you realize they're just 15 blokes as well, you know? And the Chicago win was definitely something that just kind of, at the time, when I look back at my career, and if people ask me now, you know, highlights, lowlights, or, you know, with Ireland, yes, Grand Slam, Six Nations, they were great. But actually, one of the biggest highlights for me was that Chicago game, because at the time, you know, I had early on success. We won a Grand Slam in 2009. So it happened early in my career. That eluded me I started professionally in 2005. That eluded me for 11 years. And to get it, get that monkey off the back, knowing that we're mid-cycle of a World Cup, and where I thought I was going to be in, you know, 2 years' time or 3 years' time, how important that is for that player, especially now. They're coming into this going, we've beaten them twice. Yeah. Like, you know we can do it.
Yeah. Does that game feel a lifetime ago for you now?
Yeah, it feels an eternity ago. Like, it feels, playing my last game feels, it's 2 years since I played a game of rugby, 2.5 years since I played a game of rugby. And that is, yeah, that's a long, long time. But people ask me, do I miss playing? In a weird way, I don't, because I played. I was lucky where I didn't really have any injuries till the end. So I got to play. I, on average, played, well, sorry, you know, it's, I mean, off the top of my head, it's 330 games minimum anyway, of, that's not including friendlies and stuff like that and trial games. So in, at the professional era with Leinster and Ireland and international caps, it's 330 games anyway. So I, you average that out over 10 years, you know, you're getting 30 games a season. I mean, I've played plenty of rugby.
Yeah. One of the chapters in the book is living out the script, and you kind of touched on it there. Your injury profile was really good up until the end. Had you planned in your head to go on for a certain amount of seasons? You hear, you know, for example, Johnny, you know, always talking about wanting to go on for as long as
he wants to be. He wants to be the goat, Tom Brady.
Had you thought about it in your head?
Yeah, I did, and I do kind of give a taste of, I suppose, the ending and the taste of my thoughts on kind of the next chapter, for want of a better, to use that kind of symbolism. But yeah, I kind of, in my head, I said I wanted to kind of play competitively internationally till 2000, to the World Cup.
Yeah.
After that, then I was going to play club rugby either in Ireland or in France. It'd be difficult in Ireland because of the way it's all tiered towards the national side, and, you know, they might not see that as well. They want to bring through the next thing, whatever. And then you have that debate, you stay in your club or you move. I was probably going to go to France and just play in France for a year or two and just kind of ramp down, I suppose, that way.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I was thinking. But yeah, the ending all came a lot quicker than I anticipated.
Yeah. So, at, you know, 35 now, you felt you still had a bit of road left in front of you before injury struck.
I thought I could stay fairly competitive in international rugby until for this World Cup.
Yeah.
And then at club level, I'm not saying start, but definitely just kind of play a role in club rugby post World Cup. Yeah.
Do you watch this World Cup and think, what if, or are you separated enough?
No. Yeah, I don't think what if. Like, this is you know, other guys have taken on that jersey now, and it's up to them now to leave it in a better place. My days are long gone, you know, in terms of thinking that I can play. They're long gone.
Yeah. How do you enjoy the media side of things? I think you say in your book that you like to do it for as long as you can, but again, you understand there's a shelf life.
Yeah, there's a certain, like, the different players coming out of the game. I really, like, I've enjoyed it because I am, I know there's been other guys who have finished up, but I'm probably one of the first who have done the full academy system.
Yeah.
Professional, that first kind of class. And other guys obviously have been internationals and that, but they never really went through the academy system in the way it's shaped now. So I'm the kind of first guy to kind of really only know professional rugby in the current format, I suppose. That's how I kind of look at it.
Yeah.
So I want to try haven't seen that change and see the change in, like, even when I started in 2005, just to give you context, in 2005, Leinster, for example, were still playing in the old Donnybrook Stadium, which held a couple of thousand people, and that was it. Now, I think their average attendance for a game is something like 16,000 people, and then, like, a derby or a big European game, they sell out the Aviva Stadium. Mm. You know what I mean? It's completely different now, and the coverage, everything has mushroomed since 2005. So I've seen that change, but what I haven't seen a lot of change from terms of, yes, there's place for people like yourself and that who follow all different sports and have a really good approach from your side of it. But there's not a whole lot of guys, I think, coming from a playing side of it. And I enjoy trying to translate maybe what players are thinking of or looking at rather than others. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Have you enjoyed it more than you thought?
I really like the comms. Okay. Like co-comms, yeah. I really like. Because say what you see, as you can tell, I'm a talker. So you get 80 minutes of talking.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
And you can't really offend anyone because you're just literally saying what you're seeing.
Yeah.
Punditry is a little bit more, there's a lot more, sorry, both are crafts. So there's a lot more to the, I'm not saying there's a lot more to it, but there's, it's definitely very different, especially on TV. It's segmented. You got 2-3 minutes, kind of get in, get make a point, get out. You got to kind of really boil it down to what's important, and then also understand the dynamic of being on a panel, for example, which is very different than let's say you're doing an event.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And it's your opinion, so you're always going to annoy someone with your opinion. But it makes for interesting chat. Like even the stuff I've been doing recently, you know, I think it's well documented that I might not see eye to eye with all the all my panelists, but at least, if we all had the same opinion, it'd be very, very boring.
Yeah. Again, another chapter in your book, The Afterlife.
Hmm.
Had you, from the outside looking in, it seemed that you had thought about the afterlife quite a lot because all your different business interests and stuff. Is that kind of fair to say that you had one eye on other things outside rugby and presumably that was important for you as well during your playing days?
Yeah, like I think it's, you're trying to set up long-term value and for yourself and your family. You have a very small window in rugby and I showed it. I talk about the end and how quick and finite it is. And you think you're prepared for it. But, and I thought I was probably, like in my own head, it's like, oh, I'm well prepared for this. I'm more prepared than any other player. But it's still a shock.
Yeah.
And that's probably why I talk about in the afterlife, how I still found it quite difficult, even though I thought I was well prepared. And so the rest of these guys who I know who aren't even as well prepared as I think they're going to find it even more difficult unless we as former players or players unions or governing bodies, you know, we take that on board and we try and facilitate that transition with players.
Yeah, a lot of players can get bogged down by kind of definitions when they finish. What are they? You know, they've been a rugby player for all their life, nearly.
I mean, it gets and it gets wrapped up. Your identity can get wrapped up in it. And I suppose I tried while playing to have a very rugby wasn't the thing that defined me. Is what I tried to do, and I had to do it for my own. Long-term, I suppose, looking after my family long-term, but also just for my own mental kind of health and give myself a break from the game.
Mm. You mentioned in the book, the 5 Olympic rings, visual aid, and the McNulty. That obviously worked for you.
We just saw as well, the gymnast.
Reese McLennan.
Yeah. Like he's tiny, but I was like, in fairness, the girls were talking about seeing him with his top off. But you could tell that he was so solid. I don't know where I'm going with that point. What were we saying there?
We mentioned Olympics.
Olympics, so that's it. Yeah. And it was just funny seeing him and then talking about his training.
Yeah.
Quickly got talking about his training and how it all changes now for him. It all becomes about the Olympics now earlier on rather than waiting next year to try and qualify and all that sort of stuff. It's really interesting. But yeah, the Olympic rings, the reason that came about was off the back of Michael Phelps' book.
Okay.
And the one he wrote coming into the Beijing Olympics. And a really, really good book. And I liked a lot of takeaways from the book in terms of how he planned to get certain times and worked back from that. Kind of like that's how he thought of winning, you know what I mean? He put a metric on it of what would it take to win. And so I really like that, but I like the Olympics and I like the way the rings worked and I'm very into my imagery and I just thought it was a really good way of putting a picture on a page of your different kind of buckets of things that are important to you, but they're all interlinked and they're all stronger together than on their own. You know what I mean? So it was quite important to me. It worked for me, gave me a good holistic approach and it's something that the rings might have changed, but it's a format that I still use to this day.
What do you, without getting too deep, but what do you kind of define yourself now as? Because I looked up your LinkedIn before we came in and you mentioned yourself as a recently retired international rugby player.
I need to update that, yeah.
And
I'm milking it now saying recently retired, aren't I?
Consulting with various business interests. Like what do you kind of, I know you're working with Google as well, but what do you kind of define yourself
as now? It's a good question. I suppose I'm just me. I always love the quote by Oscar Wilde, be yourself, everyone else is taken. I think I have that on one of my profiles, Twitter. Actually. Yeah, is it? Yeah. There you go. I did this really cool course in Harvard there in 2017. And one of the, we're talking about various different things, and a theme that kept coming up is that, you know, the multi-hyphenated athlete.
Yeah.
And you could really say that for anyone now. And I think it's very hard going forward. And this is just, I don't know, opinion for myself. I think they say nowadays you're changing career something like 7 times on average. So I think it's very hard for anyone to really say I'm a solicitor.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's me for life. Or, you know what I mean? Take yourself. You're changing up now. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think it's very hard to put things in a box for people. But I think in the way we work is we like stories and we like the things that fit in a nice box that fit into that story. And that's how we remember things. And I think that's going to change, particularly with athletes, particularly with pro rugby players, the more we go on. And that's because of all these different technologies and different formats where you can go direct to the fan and you don't need to engage with various different bodies if you don't want to. You can be your own voice.
People will know you from the various different investments you made and business you're involved in.
Yeah.
Is that something that, again, just keep things fresh, a lot of different interests on the side that is not just, as you say, bogged down by one title, one identity that you kind of enjoy having?
Yeah, and look, there. When I played, I was in a very fortunate position where you paid very well and you have a good bit of capital that you can invest in. Different people do it in various different ways, and that was one of my thoughts and strategies going forward. To be honest, I took a lot of inspiration. I'm a big American football and basketball fan, and I always look at, I had a big interest in the business of sport, and I always look at what are, obviously professional sports in America are way, way ahead of, like, rugby's only 23 years professional, are way ahead of us in terms of the game, let's just call it a professional game. And it's really interesting seeing what different athletes do. I mean, tip of your tongue, the biggest name ones are like Michael Jordan, Michael Johnson. You've got Magic Johnson, LeBron James. Yeah. And it's seeing what all these guys do with not only their own brand, but when they do commercial engagements, how do they framework those sort of things? A lot of them, a couple of years ago, the inspiration I took, a lot of them started taking equity stakes in different businesses in exchange for their fee and stuff like that. And it was very, very, I just find that all quite fascinating. Yeah. And a really interesting way of trying to create good investments that will pay off when you're finished rugby.
Yeah, you may have been different, but for want of a better phrase, like a lot of players will talk about being in that bubble when they're playing, going from game to game, season to season. But are you now more aware between the business interest and the media of coming across in a certain way or making a good impression, or people are not caring what people think more? Because when you're a player, obviously everyone has an opinion on how you play and you try to shut that out as a player.
Yeah.
But now are you kind of outside of rugby more aware of that? You mentioned TV there.
Yeah, you are and you aren't. I mean, I suppose you're not responsible, you're not part of a collective group anymore as such. So you don't have to be conscious of the messaging that's going out that might be different from the rest of the group or what you're saying on behalf, what you're saying could be perceived to be on a half a group. And when you're kind of out on your own now, I mean, you can do and say really whatever you're comfortable with. I always use Lukey Fitz as that example, on the left wing, where we call it the left nostril, just slagging him off. But that's like, he wouldn't be able to do, and no player, because even the way your contract is, it would be able to set up and do their own thing, even though social media kind of circumnavigates that. And you see that in different sports, different players are doing different things. And that's quite interesting to me, where and governing bodies are actually circumnavigating different media houses and going direct to consumer using these channels to broadcast themselves and, yeah. and send out, like, because they're the ones who own the asset and own the content. Why do you disseminate that to others? Yeah. It's really interesting because you both need each other. You know what I mean? Everyone needs each other to grow. The sport in general is challenged in terms of growing, particularly the 15s game. Mm. Like women's 15 and 7s are growing, but men's 15 isn't doing so great. So these are all interesting talking points. But anyway, I digress.
You wanted to, just gathering from the book and what you're saying, that sport, you were always likely to stay in sport, not particularly rugby, but that's just your interest. That's just what you're into.
Yeah, I really like the business of sport. Yeah. And I kind of want athletes and players to get their fair share of it. And I think everyone can be invested in it and everyone can do well out of it. I would love to eventually get back into it. I think it's important. I think it's very important that we have guys who have played professional rugby. If we're talking about rugby specific, I think it's very important that professional rugby players who finish up go back into the business side of the sport, the administration side of the sport, and not just the coaching side. Because they give a very real sense of what it's actually like, what you can't do, what players will and won't do. I think it's very important. And I'd like to see a lot more of that, if I'm honest.
Yeah. Are you someone that likes to look too far ahead in the future? Have you learned, I suppose, through playing that don't look too far ahead, take each step?
No, I always say you look ahead and have an idea of where you want to get to, you know, or what kind of setup you want, but like understand that it's going to ebb and flow like a river and it's going to change direction and you adapt to that. That's kind of part of the journey. It's kind of like, it's not too dissimilar to a season. You know what I mean? Yeah. You kind of know where you want to get to and you'll have up and downs along the way. You plan for it, experience it, you learn from it and you move forward. But, you know, that's, I suppose, if we're getting all philosophical, that's what life is, you know? Yeah.
Writing the book and doing it with Matt Cooper, did it help you appreciate what you've achieved and journey more, because you have to go back through it whether you like it or not?
Yeah, I very rarely, it was funny, when we started out in this process, right? I actually first wanted to do a kid's book, a young adult book.
Okay.
Because when I was young, I was like, there was no rugby book, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think the only rugby book I read when I was younger was like Tony Ward's one. And so I was like, okay, how am I doing young adult? And then we got talking to different people and I got talking to Gil and Connor was in there. Connor's the name of the guy we were talking with. And we're chatting away about it and he was like, why don't you do like a book about your actual story? And I was like, well, you know, I don't have any sad story to tell, you know? But he's like, yeah, but you have this whole body of work that, you know, you can get into and break it up. And the more we thought about it, we're like, oh yeah, actually, you know, some cool stuff happened, some bad stuff happened, and how we learned with that and how, you know, how the game is kind of, that's why we tied it to the New Zealand game, how the game as a professional changed over that time, how Ireland changed over that time, and how, you know, I was in the middle of it, I suppose, and my experience of it all. So it was a really interesting process, because when I played, I kept looking to the next thing and moving forward. And the only time you very rarely look back, just when you were reviewing a game or something like that. And it was good to, this is the first time I sat down and actually kind of looked back properly. Like I still haven't even put up any things in my house.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah.
Kind of one to look back through those.
I haven't. My wife keeps telling me like, and the same reason, like, you did all this cool stuff. Like you have some cool things, put them up in your office. Like I don't want to put them up around the house, but like maybe the office, yeah. But I still even haven't done it. Maybe that would be the final nail in the coffin. Yeah. You know what I mean? Now that the book is done and that could be the next thing that I do, you know, when I get some time, I figure it all out and kind of get some stuff up in the walls.
Short term, you're off to Japan tomorrow.
Tomorrow morning,
Because it's obviously a different experience watching thousands of miles away, but then actually being over there and getting to sample it is completely different.
I'm really excited to see. I'm trying to get my head into the Japan South Africa game as well. Just apparently the Japan games, the atmosphere is meant to be unbelievable. I see they left you behind here. They only let the big dogs go across.
Yeah. Murray's flying solo at the moment.
Oh, he's living la vida loca over there, no doubt. But I've actually listened to a couple of his podcasts. Him and Owen Toolan are, I'm loving the stats. They know I'm a numbers guy, so I just eat into their stats. But yeah, I'm excited to get over, excited to get there. My sister-in-law is from Osaka, Maho Kitano. And I'll be excited. I haven't been over there since she got married to my brother Richard there. So I'm excited to get over, I'm going with a buddy. He's never been to Japan, so okay. I'm looking forward to kind of seeing it with him and him seeing it for the first time. And then the games. Like, I mean, I am so excited about Saturday. Like, I get in first thing Friday morning, game is Saturday, obviously. I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
Are you there as a fan?
No, I'll be working.
Okay.
But it'd be so good if they win. Like, so good. And I'd love it for them.
Yeah.
I'd love it because it would, like, they'd come under, I think, unfair criticism. Well, not unfair criticism. They've come under heavy criticism, which I think is unfair. And I would love it for them. I'd love for them to do it.
It's a good place to finish. Jamie, thanks a million.
No worries. Enjoy Japan. No worries. Thank you.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year. I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Lowe!
Robbie Weekly.
Little reverse pass.